Next week, a summary of the first set of findings from a study into the fertility preservation decision-making amongst trans and non-binary Australians was released. While it was a summation, the findings showed a depth to the diversity and layered issues that face trans and non-binary people when or if they consider fertility preservation. DNR Curie spoke to Dr. Damien Riggs, Associate Professor in Social Work at Flinders University, Research Project Leader, and psychotherapist who works with transgender children, about the importance of this research.
We were quite amazed because we had ethics approval before Christmas and we thought, well, we'll wait till the new year. And then at the beginning of January, I thought, well, I'll just put it out quietly and just see where it goes and then, you know, work a bit harder down the track, which is what you normally do with surveys, to really promote it. And within 2 weeks, we had hundreds of people do it. So normally you would leave a survey open for a number of months. We ended up closing it after just over a month because we had over 400 people complete it. So we were quite amazed at the interest in this topic amongst people living in Australia. You know, we've been doing, a team of us have been doing research around trans and non-binary people's experiences for a number of years now. And I think as we've done more and more of that work, we've got a better understanding of what people are looking for in terms of research instead of researchers just saying, well, I want to look at this. So it was definitely something that I was hearing from the young people I work with. When I was presenting this work, I was hearing people say, oh, yeah, this is something I hadn't thought about. So I think it was, I guess, timely that we could do some research that people would think, oh, yeah, this is something we're really looking for. And also that people's experiences, which I think are reflected in the survey findings, is that no one else is really asking these questions. So to actually acknowledge that this is a topic, and including in the clinical sphere and in the reproductive sphere, and not a lot of attention is being paid to it. It was really simple in a sense. We didn't, other surveys we do, you know, we have a lot of measures, a lot of psychological measures. This one was really simple in the sense of asking people. We looked at both parents of trans and non-binary kids, and we haven't reported on that yet publicly. And we also looked at trans and non-binary adults, and we just asked people, have you undertaken fertility preservation, yes or no? And then if they answered yes, we asked a range of questions. You know, how did you come to that decision? What was it like for you? And for people who had not done fertility preservation, how had you come to that decision and what does that mean for you? So people, you know, if you'd answered yes, you've done fertility preservation, so that's the 7% of the 409 who had done that. And then people who had not undertaken preservation, we asked, was that your choice? Because, you know, people can make an active decision, no, I'm not interested in that. They can make a forced decision, so they're not offered fertility preservation. Or there's other factors that may shape that decision. So we were interested in, you know, not just this blanket statement, okay, so you didn't do fertility preservation, but what led to that decision? So for some people it was about the cost. For some people didn't know that was an option. For some people the clinicians they were working with didn't offer that. For some people who had, maybe the older people in our sample who had transitioned a number of years ago, it wasn't even on the card. So we were trying to look at why people didn't undertake fertility preservation. All the findings that we had around how people decided not to undertake fertility preservation, for those who that was final, I guess, rather than for people who could still do that down the track, lots of it does echo previous research. So previous research from the early 2000s found trans women in particular saying, you know, the idea of having to produce a sperm sample to sort is too distressing to me. I'd rather not. So we sort of found those same things being said by people in Australia. But also really interestingly, you know, people saying, I've already got enough kids. So there was, you know, people in our sample who had quite a number of kids. So saying, look, I don't need any more. I had my kids before I transitioned. I'm done with parenting. A lot of people saying, I don't want to delay my gender transition. And again, previous research says the same thing. Some people said they didn't have any genetic material to store. So they'd had a disease or they'd had something go on in their life that meant they had no gametes to store. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, it was just too expensive. So there was a whole range of reasons, most of which really did echo what's been found internationally. So that wasn't surprising to us, but it was interesting to hear that those same feelings and experiences are happening in Australia. And that's why we've chosen to sort of start reporting findings in this way, because we've got a fairly simple survey, as I said earlier, but there's actually a lot of complexity to it. So we've got another paper plan that will look at parents of trans and non-binary young people. And then we've got a third paper plan that will look at people's experiences of fertility preservation, because we realised that if we tried to cram all of that into the one paper or into two papers, we'd really lose this depth. So there's people gave us really long responses, the 27 people who had done fertility preservation, around what that looked like, what was good, what wasn't good. but also people who had not done it, but who had had counselling, gave us a lot of really useful input around what was useful for them, what wasn't useful for them. So we've got this really rich, open-ended responses that we're going to look at in another paper, which I think will add even more dimension to these findings.
That was Dean Arcuri with Dr. Damien Riggs discussing the study on Australian trans and non-binary people and fertility preservation, with more to come.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
We now continue Dean Arcuri's discussion with Dr. Damien Riggs, research project leader into fertility preservation decision making amongst trans and non-binary Australians, and the initial findings of this research.
Once we started getting maybe, we had 50, 100 responses, and I was just skimming them just to see where things were at, and I thought, wow, people seem to be really taken by this topic. I had thought, we've done a simple survey, it's just an exploratory initial survey that may lead to something bigger down the track. But I think people really took it and ran with it, and that's why, you include open-ended questions, because sometimes you do a survey and people put nothing in those boxes, and sometimes you do a survey like this and people have a lot to say. Because we had another final question that was just, have you got anything else to say? And often you get nothing in those responses. But people had a lot to say in all of those boxes as well. So I think it was just, we seem to have hit on a topic that people really want to speak about, and we really want to report on that. So the average age was 25. We're talking a younger, we had quite a broad range of people from 18 to 72. So the people who had done fertility preservation really skewed very young in our sample. And I don't think it's unsurprising that 40% said not very likely. I think that, if you're offered this option and it seems like a possibility and you can afford it and you think, why not, then I can understand why people would do fertility preservation, but not necessarily end up using those gametes. I think it's just about having that possibility there. But I think it's also important to signal that, anything above 0% is a lot in terms of someone wishing they could do something that they were somehow prevented to do. But out of 409 people, only 8.5% said that. So I think that also speaks to something. So this was people who were older. This was people who financially could not afford to do so. So it was something that if they'd had the option, they would have done so. But different life circumstances had prevented them from doing so. That if you looked at other populations of people who couldn't have kids genetically related to them, didn't have a way to use their own fertility, I think you'd find much higher rates of people saying they wish they had. So again, I think that says something really interesting about trans and non-binary community. I think a really big thing that we didn't signal on the infographic that we've shared is that statistically, a large number of people who had not undertaken fertility preservation didn't want to have kids were non-binary people, but also that the large number of people who had not undertaken fertility preservation but still could were non-binary people. So I think it's really important to be aware that the different pathways people take through their gender journey that may or may not involve hormones and surgery and may be less likely to be so for non-binary people differently impacts upon fertility preservation. And that's what we really talk about in the paper we're writing from this, is around really focusing on, we talk about trans and non-binary, but actually these are two quite different cohorts of people in terms of journey around gender and how that may impact on fertility. So we really don't want to lose sight of the specific needs that non-binary people might have. I think it's about recognising as well the diversity of people's experiences. So we know it's not surprising that only a relatively small number of the sample already had children, and that of those who didn't have children, only a third would like to in the future. So I think it's about acknowledging those differences so that we're really, looking at the specific needs and experiences of trans and non-binary people rather than going, well, we know what the general population wants. We know that when kids who are oncology patients, for example, we do fertility preservation for them. We know that lots of cisgender adults have concerns around fertility and aging, and we know that the fertility market is a big market, but how do trans and non-binary people fit into that narrative? My suggestion, I guess, is that it looks very different and it looks very specific. We were really heartened by, we have a really comprehensive list of community groups that we've worked with previously that have shared our research calls before. before, and it was, again, I think they were a really key part of this, that we sent it out to all these groups that we have a list of, and a great majority of them shared it for us and shared it multiple times and said kind things about the research when they shared it and vouched for us as researchers, which I think has really made this research what it is, that it's, I think, you know, we know that 409 people is a tiny drop in the ocean in the population of trans and gender diverse people in Australia. But I would feel really comfortable to say it's really quite representative, because I think it really went far and wide. And that was a product of those trusting relationships with community groups who shared it for us. So I think, you know, we owe a lot of thanks to those groups for helping promote this research.
Once again, that was Dr. Damien Riggs discussing his research into fertility preservation decision-making amongst trans and non-binary people.
This is The Informer on Joy 94.9.